Whiskey for the Ages is not sponsored or endorsed for any product or program mentioned in this show and receive no remuneration from their creators.
Whiskey for the Ages podcast listeners. I'm your host, Brian Dawson, and tonight, Hannah's here.
And a big thanks to those of you who are tuning in for the first time. Welcome to the new season.
And Alora's here, too.
Hi, guys. I'm actually home. I hope you guys enjoy the show.
Tonight, we're on to Series 3.
Yep, we have really been enjoying all of this exploration into the podcast world. And we're looking forward to doing season 3 as well.
I can't believe it's season 3 already.
I know.
That's 20 episodes.
I know.
In the can.
That's so crazy.
Starting off our series, like we've done for the past 2 seasons, we are going to be reviewing a whiskey tonight.
That's right.
And not just any whiskey. This is Traveler Whiskey Blend number 40, and I believe... who was it? Chris Stapleton actually was affiliated with this?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. This is going to be our first celebrity-affiliated product.
And we actually did have to sit down and really think about that to make sure that it was. But we were like, you know what? Yeah, this is the first one that we've done that's celebrity-affiliated. So this is pretty cool.
He's a very popular country artist, for those of you who don't know. He is very popular for doing the cover Tennessee Whiskey.
Yep.
I think he actually did that with Justin Timberlake.
Nope, it was just him, but he does have a song with Justin Timberlake, who's also from Tennessee, so it kind of crosses over there. We like his music over here. We were intrigued by this. It's fresh off the press, so we wanted to kind of see what this was all about and see if we could not get our first thoughts on this new product into you guys right as it comes out.
And for us, this is actually, we're almost on time.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, what, like I was saying.
Yeah, usually we start to review a product and it's 2 months old, 4 months old, 6 months old, a year old before we actually review it.
Sometimes, yep, I saw this one in the store and we were trying to think about what we were going to do for our comeback. We like to use our first episode of every season to highlight, to review a whiskey that is hopefully accessible, both in the availability range and also in the price point range, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And Traveler kind of hit a lot of check marks there. So
that's right. And I was in the store on Friday, and they still had some in our stores locally. So
I think people are looking for reviews, waiting to see kind of how the dust settles on opinions on it.
Well, here we go on a review.
Yep,
let's get started.
All right. So the first thing I want to do is do a little bit of a paraphrasing of the press release that came out back in January. In fact, January 8th.
Of 2024.
Of this year, yes. Buffalo Trace got together with Chris Stapleton, and together they released a statement. Buffalo Trace's master distiller, Harlan Wheatley, and the Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, and musician Chris Stapleton unveiled Traveler Whiskey. It's a new premium blended whiskey representing a first-of-its-kind collective artistry collaboration. It's blended and bottled at the award-winning distillery Buffalo Trace. Buffalo Trace says that Traveler is the result of countless hours of testing, tasting, and craftsmanship dedication. Stapleton noted, "I believe we've achieved our shared history and also some artistic vision." Wheatley added, "When making art, you experiment test, adjust, and you don't give up until you get it right. We experimented with more than 50 blends before agreeing on blend number 40. I've done a little reading on this. They gave Chris Stapleton and his band 15 of the 50 blends that they did, and almost unanimously, the band chose blend number 40.
Interesting.
This is a whiskey for everyone, especially if you've tried whiskey before and been turned away by the burn.
This is what they're saying.
Exactly.
Okay. I just want to make sure we get our who says what.
Exactly. Traveler is a unique combination of Sazerac Company whiskeys. They were very careful not to say where any of the blends came from. Could be some rye. It could be some
bourbon.
Bourbon. It could be some.
Could be some Tennessee whiskey.
It could be from wherever they've got distilleries and blending or barrels or wherever they're getting it. Buffalo Trace has collaborated with Chris and Morgan Stapleton's charitable fund, Outlaw State of Kind, for multiple fundraising initiatives. Traveler Whiskey has been widely released to retailers and bars and restaurants nationwide. Like I say, I was able to find it here in our local state of Idaho. Hopefully you can find it wherever you are as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the vital stats here. As Dad mentioned that this is a blended whiskey, so there can be multiple whiskey types going in this, from bourbon to rye, a Tennessee whiskey, which is technically a bourbon, but we know how it's a little bit different than a classic bourbon. It falls under the Buffalo Trace line, but we know that that falls even further under the Sazerac Company Incorporated. We don't know exactly all of the distilleries that were involved in this, whether it was only Buffalo Trace or if there were other ones that played part, that are brother sister companies to Buffalo Trace. We also don't know the mash bill. Again, this is a blended whiskey, so we know that there's probably corn, rye, barley, and maybe some wheat in there as well. We don't know the age statement. There's a lot here that we don't know. So we're really going into this with expectations blown open.
True to Sazerac. They seldom disclose a lot of information about their products.
Yeah. They like keeping things close to the chest. And with Buffalo Trace products, it's common to get a mash bill recipe number, which has a guesstimate of all of the breakdowns of all of the grain percentages. This time we're not getting any of that, so we'll see what we can pick out while we do this. ABV, this comes in at 45%, aka 90 proof. Color, they say that it's a light gold. I'm going to disagree with that a little bit. It looks a little bit darker to me than that.
It's probably like an amber or something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty close. Kind of a tawny look to it. It is a recent release, so hopefully you should still be able to find it in your stores. Don't know exactly how available it is across the country, but we're over here in Idaho and we found it here in plentiful supply. So hopefully that means you can find some for yourself too if this review tickles your fancy. MSRP, this sits at just under $40, $39.99. That's for a 750 milliliter bottle. We got this in March here of 2024. Fair price estimates per Booze app in March of 2024 prices this at $47.75. Shelf price that you can see across the states by Booze app, again, March 2024, prices this at around $37.69. I anticipate that, or I suspect that that's because this is a new product and there's an uncertain amount of demand going into it yet, so all of the price points are going to sit fairly close together. We paid just about that MSRP price of $39.95 over here in Idaho.
So let's get to the review. Laura, you're going to be on the shtick here first. I'm going to ask you, what do you think about this nose?
It's pretty mellow. I want to actually start by saying we've kind of been wary about celebrity influenced whiskey or any kind of alcohol. Because, I mean, it kind of falls under the false authority fallacy, where if a celebrity says something, a lot of people can, you know, follow it blindly, saying, like, oh my god, this is the best thing. Like, if you're a huge Chris Stapleton fan, Tennessee whiskey like this one, I'd be like, oh, well, it has to be good. So, whatever, this is just very subjective, is what I want to first start out with saying. Don't really fall under that false authority.
Yeah, we're not going to be reviewing this as Chris Stapleton fans looking to give him a leg up just because we're Chris Stapleton fans. But we're just going to be honest with what we think about it.
Yeah, so on that note, the very first initial one, like I say, is pretty mellow, but I get a lot of cornbread, like sweetened cornbread. I'm not too fond of that, but another part of it is a light sugar. Like, if you were to make a sweetened cornbread and then dust powdered sugar on top of it, okay, I could see that. There's a little bit of caramel here, but it's mostly just kind of grainy. It's very mellow for me.
This is one of the most mellow whiskeys I've brought to my nose. It's not assertive in any way.
No, it smells like whatever rye is in here. And I'm talking about the rye grain. I don't think there's a lot. This smells more wheat-based.
Yeah.
I agree with what Alora's saying about the cornbread element. I like that. I think maybe if you hunt for it, there's a little bit of like a cinnamon sugar.
Okay, I get that.
There's like a little bit of that.
Like the kind you find on a snickerdoodle, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Very much so.
Well, it's interesting you say snickerdoodle. It's got a little bit of a baking element to it.
I think so. This does ring very baking. I can see why they said in their statement that this was going to be an approachable product for people who may not even be into whiskey or just starting to get into whiskey. This is not going to hurt your nose.
No.
Unless as long as you take in a small whiff, even as a beginner, like, you're not going to get burned on this. This is definitely one of the most approachable noses I've had from an alcohol standpoint.
You know, y'all mentioned baking. So, for all my bakers out there, when you make homemade cookie dough, it has a smell to it. Like, even before you put it into the oven, like, you're working with brown sugar, butter. I'm smelling all the ingredients that are combined into the dough before it actually gets into the oven, which is, I mean, it's just mellow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of sweet here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not traditional bourbon sweet. It's not caramely.
No.
It's not
fruity. There's no fruit here.
No.
Okay. It's a very, like, approachable one for a student, or just a student of bourbon, I guess.
Somebody getting started.
Yeah, I took my first sip. Another thing that I wasn't entirely sure. So on the nose, and I feel it kind of transition here into the mouth as well, there's kind of a baking soda effervescence. And baking soda can have a little bit of a burning. This isn't an alcohol burning by any means, but you just feel the baked burnness. It's hard for me to describe, but when I put it on my palate, I get a little bit of that too. Like, there's just a flash of, like, almost a carbonation moment, and
like
then it's
soda,
done.
Like a warm soda.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little bit of a carbonated essence. I could get that on the nose as well. I don't want to go.
Kind of like an effervescence?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting you say that. I poured our samples we're drinking tonight. When I popped the cork, it popped. And inside,
like, there was pressure buildup?
Yes. Yes. And when it popped, a little wisp of air, if you will, circled inside the bottle.
That's interesting.
You see that when you open a kombucha,
or just a soda in general. Soda, yeah. But first impressions here, like I've only taken two sips. Mouthfeel, this is really light.
It is light.
This is really, really, really light. I don't want to go so far as to say it's watery, but I'm not feeling, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not feeling transfixed by the mouthfeel.
Okay.
This isn't stopping me in my tracks. I'm not getting a lot of grip. I'm not feeling a lot of oiliness. Okay. It's just moving right along.
That's interesting that you say that, because for me it's the exact opposite. I think that this does have a creamy sort of feeling to it. For me, it kind of, if you've had warm soda before, it kind of has that feeling. It's carbonated, but it's not as carbonated because of the temperature. But it coats the tongue. Like, I can feel my tongue being coated by this. Almost as if I'm drinking milk or something.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to go that far. Like, soda feels heavier in the mouth than this does.
Yeah, most certainly. This is a very, very light sort of, everything about this is just light. It's
more silky than oily.
Yeah, with that little pop of carbonation moment.
I'll agree with that.
I put a new whiskey in my mouth, and when I do, I take a fairly large first sip, and I simply hold it. And the longer I hold it, it doesn't really do a lot to my mouth other than the back of the bottom of the tongue begins to feel a little prickly. It's by no means hard to hold.
Mm-mm.
But it is 90 proof. It is...
It's so hard to believe for me, but
45% alcohol.
And well, again, I think that's because rye is not a high proportion ingredient in this mash bill. I think I don't even think corn is. I think that this is wheat forward. This is really wheat forward to me.
And the thing is in the taste, to me, the very first thing that I was hit with was sugar cookie dough. Cookie dough. That was the very, very first thing.
You said snickerdoodles. Aren't snickerdoodles?
They are technically, but... Yeah.
A sugar cookie?
Yeah, but I'm talking about the ones where, if you were to eat edible sugar cookie dough, that would be something like this. Or if you're eating store-bought sugar cookies, with the light frosting, the actual taste of the cookie, not the frosting. Mm-hmm. It's got a very, yes, I'm a sugar cookie. I identify as a sugar cookie. But the thing is, I don't see a whole lot of it. There might be a little bit of cornbread. Wheat and white bread have a taste difference. And I think this is actually more on the side of white bread than it is on the wheat bread.
And it is very sweet. I'll give that to you. So I guess maybe it could be corn forward in that regard.
I'm getting a lot of corn.
I see a little bit of cornbread.
And the corn I'm getting, you're saying cornbread?
Mm-hmm.
I'm tasting... Imagine freshly husked sweet corn. The sweetness of the broken kernels as you're trying to peel the husks off. There's a sweetness in that kernel. And I'm getting that sweetness. The milky sweetness from the corn.
Honestly, I keep coming in and I keep looking for things to taste. I'm really not getting a whole lot of things to taste. I get the cornbread moment. I get the sugar cookie moment, but beyond that, this is really simple. They're simple sugar, simple syrup. I'm not really getting any wood. Not really getting any spice. That cinnamon from the nose is kind of gone, which is unfortunate because I think it could actually add something here. If the cinnamon was a bit more present, it'd give this a little bit more bite.
I'm working my way around the wheel in my mind. And when I say the wheel, it's our whiskey wheel.
Yeah.
I don't see any floral or anything like that. I don't get any sort of citrus. And y'all have to understand, like, it could be an amazing whiskey for some of you guys. For us, it's just we've been exposed to several, like, whiskeys that have such a high flavor profile, a higher proof. We've been exposed to just more. So what we say might not be the case for you guys.
My first impression is there's warmth, but not overbearing warmth. I mean, I'm getting it a little bit on the tongue. I'm getting it on my throat a little bit. But like Alora says, there's no floral here. There's fruit is just non-existent. And for a Buffalo Trace product, it's
That's really hard to believe.
That this is a Buffalo Trace product.
Yeah.
Because they're known for their fruit, and there just isn't any here. No berries, no...
Cherries,
no dates, no plums. There just isn't anything that I could identify as, wow, that's really nice and fruity. Like Alora says, there's no citrus here. Spice-wise, now I do get some spice. I do get the cinnamon, but it's really faint.
I don't.
Almost like it's, dare I say, stale cinnamon. Like it's a cinnamon that's been out too long.
Okay.
I also get some white pepper. White pepper is on the sweeter side of pepper, but there is a pepper element to it. Hannah, you said there's no rye here.
I'm just not getting it. Rye
is spicy.
Rye is spicy and rye is fresh. This is neither spicy
nor fresh. No. But I do get the baked element in here.
Yeah.
I don't want to call this bready because it's not.
No. It's cakey.
It's more cakey. Exactly.
It's cakey. Like a yellow cakey.
So I just did a Kentucky Chew with this, and for those of you who don't know, a Kentucky Chew is essentially you swish the whiskey or the alcohol that you're drinking around and around, trying to
aggravate.
Trying to aggravate all of the taste buds on your tongue, even the ones that are in other areas of the mouth. So after that, I actually found a little tiny bit of nutmeg, but the kind of nutmeg you'd find in eggnog. Like, just very mellow.
See, okay, I just did a Kentucky Chew as well. Now I've got some fruit.
Yeah.
Now I've got some fruit. It's cherry blossoms, though. It's not like a full-fledged cherry, but you've got kind of like the freshness of a cherry blossom here going on. So we're hitting a floral element. I really like that. Now I can go, well, that's akin to a Buffalo Trace product.
But you're certainly not going to...
But I'm not going to Kentucky Chew every sip I take of this.
No.
Yeah. It's just a lot of effort, and honestly, your teeth will thank you if you don't. I feel like it's not necessarily as freshening. Like, sometimes when you do a Kentucky Chew, you feel like you've just... exposed your mouth to the cleanest mouthwash ever.
Yeah. You this feel one, fresh.
Just, yeah, and then this one just, I mean...
It almost feels dark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you're taking, like, the weakest kind of mouthwash, and then you're swishing it
like
around.
Like a kid's mouthwash.
Yeah. Something like that. So...
One that doesn't have alcohol in it. Like, I've had non-alcohol mouthwashes burn more than this on a Kentucky Chew, on a swish.
Don't drink your mouthwash, people.
I never have. I'm simply saying that when you swish any mouthwash, you're bound to feel some sort of effect. And this is so mellow. This is so simple. I mean,
I feel like this one, you know, people combine foods and other kinds of stuff with, they pair stuff, essentially.
Uh-huh.
I feel like this one could be elevated if you have something with it. It just is too, I think for me personally, it's too mellow and...
Too sweet.
Not even that. For me, it's just too bland. I have to really hunt to find flavors, which I'm not too wowed over. But on that note, I think that it would be a really great bourbon to pair stuff with. Like, I wonder how you'd pair it with cheese or...
I wouldn't. I mean, I think that if I were to pair this with anything, I'd reduce it down to its most syrupiness component and put it over ice cream. Because, this has that kind of sweetness that I would...
How about a bread pudding?
I could be convinced. Like, if you put cinnamon over it, like, this could be good with snickerdoodles.
I think this would get lost in a bread pudding, though. I'm really...
It's not... It doesn't stand up for itself.
It's really simple. It's... really sweet. I do think that you've got to have it with something, just because if you're having a whiskey neat, and it can be any type of whiskey here, fill in the blank however you will, but if you're having a whiskey neat or on the rocks or anything like that, you're wanting a moment, you know, like you're wanting to kind of get multiple things out of it. You're looking for some element of complexity, or you're looking for some element that just punches through the rest of them. Like if you're having a high proof something, you're looking for a complex punch in the alcoholic face, you know, and the high alcohol face. If you're having scotch, you're looking for something that's gonna smack you upside the head with smoke, peat, whatever it is. And rye has those same things. This just, on its own, I'm not impressed.
Well, I'm going back to the press release, and the press release says if you were ever offended by the burn, then this could possibly fit in.
And
this is not going to burn you.
This is a very, very entry level. Like, you are getting into whiskey. You are seeing what it's all about. And this would be a fantastic one to start out with.
And it's not going to hurt you.
No, and I think that keeping the press release and the goal of this product in mind is really important. And, you know, here I am talking about value again. But whenever you buy any product, whether it's with a price point in mind or a flavor profile in mind or anything like that, you have to come at it with the expectation to match it. So I'm buying here a $40 product, essentially, that's meant to not be aggressive on its alcohol level. That's meant to be approachable to anybody at any level of whiskey. So I cannot, as a reviewer, as a plain old sipper, come into it and expect a high proof complexity, multiple flavor wheel wedges sticking out like sore thumbs. I can't go into it expecting the fruit to be hit, the spice to be hit, the floral to be hit, the sugar, baking, wood, oily mouthfeel. I can't go into it like that. That's not fair to the bourbon to the whiskey evaluation here. That's my personal, this is what I expect out of a whiskey. So I have to take myself out of that a little bit as I'm sipping this.
So a lot of whiskeys will have vanilla.
Yeah.
And the vanilla that's here, I'm going to use Alora's cookie analogy. It's almost like it's the frosting. Vanilla in the frosting.
Yeah.
It's not straight in your face vanilla like vanilla ice cream or vanilla bean anything or vanilla bean coffee creamer or anything like that. This has got an element that's mixed with it. Hannah, you said simple sugar.
Yeah.
Maybe it's simple sugar vanilla.
Yeah, could be.
When I did the Kentucky Chew, Laura, just like you, nutmeg. I got the nutmeg, almost to the point where the nutmeg won't go away now.
So, with the sugar element, do y'all think that it's like the powdered sugar that we had when we used to have the French toast?
No. No. I actually do. I think powdered sugar is a lot sweeter than this. This does have a little bit of reservation to it, but
there is a darkness here, but I wouldn't go so far as to say the darkness is coming from any kind of wood. I just don't know what the darkness is.
I don't even think it's light brown sugar.
No. I think it's vanilla. I mean, vanilla in as an essence is really dark.
Could be.
I think that the foundation of this is probably like stuck in vanilla.
Okay.
The problem with it is that, sure, whenever you have a foundation in a whiskey, that foundation is critical for every other flavor to play off of. And you want to be able to go, okay, if I'm tasting cherries, I can see how cherries and vanilla are paired well together. Or, okay, I can get caramel. Well, caramel and vanilla can have like a flavor bomb of sugary sweetness with it. If you're getting oak, okay, well, caramelized oak, there's a lot of depth there. There's a lot of darkness there. Vanilla oak can have a lot of...
Okay.
Essentially, you're looking for flavors to marry with each
other. Right. Now, the problem here is we've got our vanilla base. That's great. Nothing wrong with having a vanilla base. But when the flavors that you're complementing are maybe a little bit of nutmeg or yellow cake or a stray bit of cherry blossom on once in a blue moon, you're not really marrying those things. They become almost indistinguishable. You know,
yeah.
Like going from vanilla to yellow cake, there's not a big leap there.
No.
There's no complementary action. It's just one blending, bleeding into the other where you don't really notice the distinction that much. Unless you're looking at a flavor wheel to go, yellow cake, vanilla.
So I've got a question for y'all. So if you were to... I'm thinking baking-wise. I know I bake a lot of stuff. The very first time I made sugar cookies, we didn't have almond extract. And a lot of sugar cookies actually require that. I wouldn't, but, you know, the recipe said to include it. So I went to Dad, and I'm like, Dad, what are some bourbons that are nut-heavy? And he was like, try this one. I don't even remember what it was. But... on that note, while I digress, this one I'd probably be tempted to put into sugar cookie dough just to see what it can do. Mm-hmm. Like, I would substitute it as an extract. My question is, could you make this be a bourbon or a whiskey extract?
I think you could.
Yeah.
I think you really could because it's not going to overpower anything.
No. No.
I think, to the fault of it's too balanced.
Yeah.
And
but yet it's not balanced according to what I define it as balanced.
Well, it's not balanced in the sense that there are no prominent flavors that are jumping out. All of the flavors here are
just sweet.
Married in a...
Like, when we talk about balance, so you can think of it like a big tree, right? So, like, if you've got a big oak tree, you've got, okay, you've got your trunk, and then you've got your big, full, half-moon circle of foliage sticking up out of the top. A well-balanced bourbon means that you've got a little bit of everything from all of the sides of that treetop. You've got a little bit of the fruit, you've got a little bit of the spice, the oak, the baking element, etc. That's like the super high balance product that we're talking about. This still is balanced, but not for the same reason. Instead of a fully fledged, full grown oak tree with a big old tree top, I consider this more of like a seedling, a sapling plant, where you've really only got the trunk. Okay, there's really only that sweetness element to it, but considering proportion wise that you're only able to work with a trunk, everything that you do have fits within that trunk.
Exactly.
It's all the sweet balance there. It's not full grown though. That's my problem. I like a full grown oak tree balance, not a little sapling balance. There's nothing wrong with a sapling balance. This is just a personal preference thing.
Well, Laura, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is a great whiskey for someone who's wants to try a whiskey.
Yeah.
It's not going to wow anybody. Mm-mm. But as a first whiskey, mm-hmm. maybe this is going to be easier to drink than a Maker's Mark.
Yeah.
Perhaps, yeah. I mean, this probably would have been an easier one for me to start out on.
Or maybe it's going to be easier to drink than a Buffalo Trace.
Yeah.
Or a Wild Turkey.
Yeah.
Or an Old Forester 86. I mean, this is
because this does drink more in like the 84, 86 proof range.
Exactly.
It doesn't drink like a 90 proof. I think Alora, I also think Alora hit the nail on the head, but for a slightly different reason. But I do think that this is a baking whiskey. I don't think it's a cooking whiskey. Like, you wouldn't put this in a barbecue sauce. It's just not going to stand up with anybody. But if you put this in a cake or on a cookie or anything like that, this could really elevate that.
Absolutely. You wouldn't be making bourbon chicken with this.
No. It just wouldn't stand up to something savory. But it could blend really well with a baking component.
I do want to bring something up. So, I think that it could be used in a cooking setting. I actually do. And how you would use it is, Dad, you have this amazing, beautiful thing called blackberry bourbon sauce over prime ribs. I think that you could get away with using this for the blackberries.
No. The blackberry bourbon barbecue sauce that I make complements a big, bold piece of beef.
Yeah.
Like a beef ribs.
Yeah.
Or brisket.
Yeah,
but this is just mellow enough to blend in with get blackberry lost. Flavors.
Beef is such a heavy meat flavor, and you need every ingredient that you add to beef has to stand up to beef. This is not going to stand up to it. It's going to get lost in that.
Just so you know, the last couple batches that I've made, I've used Old Forester 1920.
Which is a 115.
Oh, dang. So I am way off. All right.
Which is a 115 proof product. It's one of our absolute favorites over here.
It's got a lot of fruit in it.
Yeah, you can find that review on our website. I know Dad and I have a written review for that one. I don't know if Alora does yet, but it's one of her favorites as well. So if you haven't had that one and want to know a little bit more about it, go check that one out on our website. But before I digress too far, we should talk about the finish of this.
It's not long. I mean, it's very, very white bread forward, if anything, for me. And I'm more left with a feeling of it than I am with an actual taste. Uh-huh.
There's a little bit of throat warmth, but it's just that. It's a little bit. There's no flavor in the throat warmth.
Uh-huh.
like Laura says, there's no lasting power here. It just doesn't, it doesn't hold up.
I attribute that to the mouthfeel. Like I mentioned kind of at the start of the palate moment, it's pretty thin, a little bit watery. I think when you have a mouthfeel like that, you're not going to get a high-powered finish just because there's not a whole lot for that whiskey to grip to, whether on the palate or on the way down. But that being said, I actually do really like the finish of this one. Not for its lasting power, but I like how clean the finish is.
It's a very clean finish.
It's a really clean finish. Like, it feels like the perfect period to the moment.
There's no aftertaste.
No.
And I kind of say the reason why there's no aftertaste is there's no taste to it to begin with.
Well...
What? I mean, take that as you will.
You said it.
We were trying to be nice.
Well. I mean, we're being nice, but we're being truthful at the same time.
Yeah, and this comes from a perspective where we've had probably hundreds of just general whiskeys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
also coming from, we're trying to approach this product for what it's advertising itself to be.
Exactly.
And I think it hits that mark.
It hits that mark. For what it's saying it wants to do, nailed it. Nailed it. If you're a beginner, if you're someone who doesn't like the heat, if you're someone who maybe wants to bake, if you're it's just an easy approach whiskey. If you're coming into it with any higher expectations, be prepared to be disappointed. But it's kind of on you for coming in with expectations that it was never meant to live up to.
Yeah.
So you got to think about it in that sense. If you're a whiskey hound, if you're a bourbon hound, if you're the one looking for all of the blends, all of the store picks, all of the high proof unicorns out there, pass this one over.
Okay? I will say that baking with alcohol in general is fun, so go to town.
Yeah, if you're
really
a baker,
seriously, like seriously, I will, for that sugar cookie dough, I went from playing it really safe to tasting the dough and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm gonna need more than this, and it turned out to be like a quarter cup of whiskey at least. No regrets. Go to town. I'm dead serious.
The alcohol burns off or bakes off anyway.
Yeah, you won't taste it unless you go my route where want that taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Hannah, setting. What do you think?
So I know we've been talking about a whole lot of baking here. My setting has nothing to do with baking. My setting came in within the first like 3 or 4 sips of having this. It hit me that fast, which is pretty uncommon. I'm happy that it hit this fast. Now I don't feel pressured. So I would want to have this at an airport right before a flight. Like if you're a nerd, I'll let Alora get her yah-yahs out.
That would have been perfect for me to fly into.
So, but that's the thing. Like if you're a nervous flyer or if you're one to kind of sit at a bar before your flight goes, before you're called up to board, I think that this one could be a really mellow, really like, we can like calm down, relax a little bit without getting sloshed and without being like, oh man, that is some alcohol burn. Like you don't have to go that far. Like if you want something a little stronger than a beer per se or a glass of wine, I think this could be a really great alternative. And I think that with the hustle and bustle of everything else going on around you at an airport, maybe something as simple as this would actually be a really nice retreat.
You know, I laughed a whole bunch because I just flew in.
And are your arms tired.
Yeah, she flew a long way.
All right. Well, it was more just how awake I was for the duration, but it's funny that you do say that because I'm like, oh yeah, that actually could work. Where, yeah, this probably would be like an airport standard. So I laugh, but I understand.
And I think they'd sell a lot of it because of the celebrity name.
Yeah, exactly. Again, false authority, fallacy there. Don't take it with a grain of salt.
But I mean, it's called Traveler Whiskey, everybody. Okay? Like, listen.
Like you planned this, man.
Well, actually, I didn't. In fact, I'd meant to have a whole little spiel on the fact that the name Traveler comes from the album title that Chris Stapleton had, Traveler, in which Tennessee Whiskey was a song on that album. But it lended itself to my settings.
It was interesting when they were choosing names. I did a little more research on that. Where did the name come from? Chris Stapleton had a completely different idea. And whatever that idea was, they don't disclose whatever that idea was. But Buffalo Trace didn't like it.
Oh.
So then he came back and said, well, what about Traveler? So they did an internet search. And it turns out that Traveler is already copyrighted. Or trademarked, one or the other.
Okay. As a whiskey?
Yeah. It turns out it was owned by Buffalo Trace.
They just never had made a
they
product.
They just never
under
made
that name?
A they never made a product.
So it
of
was
that
really
name.
Serendipitous then that
exactly.
It just, you know, they'd held it in reserve for this very moment.
Without even planning it.
But that is the name of an album that he has,
exactly.
Traveler, that has Tennessee Whiskey on it. So I think it's a really appropriate name. And I think and honestly, like, my brain just put together that the airport setting I created.
You're
pairs.
Very good at that. Your brain putting together things that...
My mouth thinks faster than my brain sometimes, honestly.
I think that goes for a lot of people.
I take it to a new level, okay? But, Alora, so I'm curious whether your song choice... is going to be influenced by the Chris Stapleton name.
Of course it is.
Good.
Of course it is.
I would
be
disappointed.
A crime. Like, what am I going to do? Choose a Miley Cyrus song? Like, come on.
I would be disappointed.
You would be very disappointed.
So which one, though?
Tennessee Whiskey.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah. It would be a crime. Like, what, we talk about Tennessee Whiskey for, like, 2 minutes out of this, or however
Whatever.
Long, and then I don't choose Tennessee Whiskey? Like,
yeah. So, but how, why, though? Why Tennessee Whiskey and not Broken Halos or something from when he was with the Steel Drivers, Chris Stapleton and the Steel Drivers? Like, why?
I mean, it's just a standard. I mean, that's how I got into
you're
Chris
smooth
Stapleton.
As Tennessee Whiskey.
Yeah. You're as sweet as strawberry wine. I don't taste strawberries, but
no.
I mean, take that what you will. For me, I wanted to choose Tennessee Whiskey for this because, one, it'd be easy. But two, I mean, I'm a college student. I have to choose the easiest route.
Yeah.
But also, you know, this is actually the song that I started out when I first started listening to Chris Stapleton.
I think
like
it's
seriously,
a, most people's.
Yep.
Most
yeah.
People's
I mean, that
intro
was one of his biggest hits. So that was probably my gateway to even learning about the dude. So in a way, it being a gateway, and then this. Potentially being a gateway to some whiskey drinkers, then yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
And respect it.
Yeah, definitely.
I do two songs. As for the more classical setting, at my school I did a song where I conducted, and it was a very country setting. It's called Perthshire Majesty from a composer named Samuel Hazo. Essentially, a high school director commissioned the composer to write this song, and they both bonded over how they grew up in Scotland. Now, I am not saying that this whiskey has any sort of Scottish influence.
And it doesn't.
By any means, because it really doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's the furthest thing away. But I will say that... Perthshire Majesty has the potential of, like, country flares. Like, it talks of the Rolling Hills, in my opinion. Like, Rolling Hills, wispy air sort of setting. It's a very... I mean, that one's a song that a lot of... I mean, it's not the easiest song for a band to play to. I should say that this is a band, or a song arranged for a concert band. Instead of an orchestra. this song would be good for a band that is getting into playing more complicated stuff. It starts out with a soprano saxophone solo that kind of sounds like not necessarily bagpipes, but also kind of bagpipes. I know I'm kind of contradicting myself, but it's a very country feeling song. It's a very gorgeous one. Highly recommend. I am writing the review right now.
And what is the name of that song again?
Perth Your Majesty. It's a town. It's not from Australia. It's from Scotland. So.
Okay. Very yeah. cool. So, is this worth the price?
No. No. Not for me. I'd pay 20 max.
So, here's the rub. And I think this one is maybe one of the more complex worth the price questions that we've had. Buffalo Trace straight bourbon whiskey is a $25 to $30 product. All day, every day, happy with that price point. Eagle Rare 10-Year, also a Buffalo Trace product, sits at about $39.95 these days as well, MSRP. So, very comparable to what Traveler here is. Me, as a buyer, I would rather pay $40 for Eagle Rare than I would pay $40 for Traveler. That being said, Eagle Rare is not a celebrity endorsed product. So, as a celebrity endorsed product, it affects the value. There's no way around that. Now, if this had not been a Chris Stapleton product, this is not worth $40. So you have to accept that when you buy this for $40, you're buying it in part because of its name. I think that as a standalone, if Chris Stapleton's name wasn't on this, it would be a $25 product. Knowing that I'm buying a Chris Stapleton endorsed creation, $40 is appropriate. I wouldn't want them to ask less than that.
And keep in mind,
I get why they're asking $40.
And keep in mind, some of this money is going to Stapleton's charitable fund.
Absolutely.
Outlaw State of Kind.
And we definitely have to do a little bit more research on all of the different initiatives they have associated with that fund. But knowing that, knowing the celebrity effect here, $40 is an appropriate price for this product. As a product itself, I don't think it's worth that. But knowing the full picture, yeah, it is.
So I'm going to revise this question.
Do you think it's worth $40?
I won't buy it again.
Okay.
Which kind of takes us to the next line. Sad when it's gone, but instead of saying sad when it's gone, would you reach for this again in the near future because it's on our shelf?
The only reason why I would reach for it again would be for baking. Like if I wanted a whiskey extract naturally for a cookie dough or some kind of special occasion where I am making cookies or even any sort of sugary sort of baking recipe. That would be the only reason.
I'd put it over ice cream. Like, I really would. I think that's the only time I'd really reach for this. But, again, it's important to know our background and what we like in our whiskey. And we traditionally like high balance, high complexity, high proof products, and this doesn't serve on that. So as a plain old sipper, no, I would not get this again. This doesn't hit my personal markers. I don't think I'll be particularly sad when it's gone. I don't think I'm going to reach for it too often when I see it next to all of the other products we have in our bunker. But I'm going to reiterate that I think it's really important that when you buy this product, you buy it with the correct expectation in mind and understand what the product is going for, what the achievement is according to Chris Stapleton and according to Buffalo Trace, and don't try to push a false or a higher expectation on it than what's actually reasonable. I think that's really important with this product in particular.
As whiskey drinkers, it's very difficult to go into a product without having a preconceived notion. I like high-proof bourbon. When I get an Elijah Craig barrel proof, a Larceny barrel proof, a Stag, an E.H. Taylor barrel proof, I have a preconceived notion going in that I'm going to like it. Mm-hmm. That said, that's not always the case. There have been some bookers that have
flopped hard.
And I'm a booker's fanboy. You've heard me say it numerous times on this show. It's just when you go in with a preconceived notion, be prepared to be disappointed or be prepared to be wowed.
Yeah.
Because a preconceived notion does not bode well for a reviewer.
Yeah. Or for the whiskey. You know, even as a plain old sipper, and there have been products that we've bought without the intention to review, but just to have and give a go, or whether they're on a clearance rack or whatever the case may be, and we have it and we go, wow, this really sucked. But we went into it with the wrong kind of expectation.
Exactly.
And that hurts the whiskey, because if you don't understand the product that you're buying, and I think with whiskey it's really important that you understand the product that you're buying and not just go for, oh, this is a pretty label or a pretty bottle shape, or it's one that I didn't see on a commercial, because there are some like that too, that you hurt what the whiskey is actually trying to offer. This certainly, is going to be a home run for somebody. And
this is going to be a gateway whiskey.
Yeah. And I think that's what it's meant for. That's what we're going to celebrate it as. I'm not going to demand for it to be a Booker's level caliber here. That's just wrong. It's just inappropriate to do.
It's really hard for us to give ratings on something we've just sat down and drank.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a rating number out there. I don't know if this is where I'll end up. My personal feeling right now is low 80s. 82, 83. That's kind of where I'm thinking. I don't know what my 82s and 83s are. I'd rather have something else. Yeah. But that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me.
I think I'd probably go somewhere in the mid-80s range. I don't have a lot of products in that range to my recollection. Again, I don't know if this, you know, that's going to stick. It probably will. I'm going to keep it generalized to a mid-80s ranking. But that's based, you know, maybe my rating process is skewed to give lower ratings to products like this, because I put more point value on complexity, balance, warmth, oak, and fruit, of which this doesn't really have a whole lot. So that's my rating process based off of my flavor preference when I have a whiskey. And that's just how it's going to be. So this is going to be in the mid 80 range, maybe low 80 range, because I likely won't buy it again. But
there's so many other bourbons at $40 that are whiskeys.
Like I said, I'd rather buy Eagle Rare all day at this price.
When you can find it.
When you can find it.
When you can find it.
Yeah. That one's been hard to come by. But what about you, Allura? What are you thinking for rating?
So I've got a bit of a mathematical approach to it, kind of like Hannah. The way I calculated it, I feel bad about the score. But again, like with Chris Stapleton or any sort of celebrity-influenced anything, take my review and rating with a grain of salt, because it's all very, very subjective. I rated it once I calculated it as a 73. A 73%. Now, with that, I feel like I have to give the brownie points because simply it's a very entry-level whiskey. So I feel like I have to give brownie points simply for that. Like, I look at it honestly as like, I'm going to give a first grader a 70% or something, and it could be an assignment as easy as, like, color in the attributed.
But if you know that images. This is a first grader, because I, you know,
I feel like I'd have to give, like, an extra 10 points, so yeah. About an 83, so kind of, like.
I think so, too.
Simply because of that. Now, if this weren't celebrity, I'd be like, no, it is a 73. I'm very disappointed with this. But no, it's, or if it wasn't like an entry level, I'd be like, no, it's a 73.
Yeah.
Now, I look at it also with the price, how I look at price, I mean, I look at other bourbons or other whiskeys that I have had. Like, Larceny is going to be in the $20 range. Oh my God.
25-30-ish.
Yeah.
25 or 30-ish dollar range. I look at that and I'm like, wow, what a winner. That's awesome. That's awesome for me as a college student to have in my cabinet. This is quite the ask for me. Now, celebrity influence, charity, all for that. Okay, I will agree. $40. But even then, I'm still like, but I could be using my money for other things.
Yeah. So I want to ask, though, because obviously, the way that all three of us rate, while it's different, are all skewed towards that higher complexity, higher balance, et cetera, et cetera. Knowing that this product is marketed as an entry level, marketed as something that isn't going to burn you, marketed as something that everybody can enjoy, if that is the only basis of our rating, how does this match what it's being, what it's meant to do?
It's a perfect match.
It really is.
So I'm in not... that sense, it's a 100, okay? So yeah. That's really important to know. That all three of us, based off of our personal flavor profiles, it's not something we're really enjoying. But if you're reading that press statement and going, yes, that's what I would really love to have in a bourbon. Get this. Okay?
This
matches it perfectly.
There's going to be people that come over to the house.
Yeah.
And they all know, for the most part, we drink whiskey.
Yeah.
And if one of them were to ask me today, what would you recommend? I would grab this bottle.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that Traveler could elevate itself any more than what it already has based off of what it's saying it's going to do.
So, I also want to mention, in concert, it's not unusual for artists to shoot a glass of whiskey while they perform. That is very, very common. In fact, like, some audience members will even bring a flight of shot glasses of whiskey or, like, Fireball or anything like that. And all of the band members, even, like, the fiddler, the drum set, they'll all take a shot. Yeah. This is very shootable. Like, I mean, I don't shoot very often. I feel comfortable shooting this. Well, just no problem.
Just as an observation here, we've got three glasses sitting on our counter as we're doing this this podcast. Hannah just caught up to me. My glass is nearly gone.
Yeah. It's really been super easy.
Like, easy
it doesn't
drink.
Taste bad, okay?
No, it tastes, I like it.
It's perfectly, you know, like, palatable. It's just not a wow whiskey. But in any case, if you did want to learn a little bit more about Buffalo Trace, they've got so many offerings, okay? They're one of the biggest names in the American whiskey game, primarily in bourbon, but they're highly prolific in rye as well. So if you want to learn a little bit more about that, well, you can stick with Whiskey for the Ages, okay? Because we had a podcast just on our last season. It was our, so season 2, episode 6. This was a whole expose that I, yours truly, did on Buffalo Trace Distillery. If you wanted to see a full lineup of everything that we've reviewed from Buffalo Trace Distillery, you can go to that page on our website, Whiskey for the Ages. It's under that distillery page. You can see everything that we've reviewed there. There's been a whole lot, okay? Because it is prolific. There's something for everybody in the Buffalo Trace world. I'm a Buffalo Trace lover. So give that a shot. Give that a look through. You know, and tell us what you think.
So we're on to this fortnight in whiskey.
The first one of the season.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm tearing up.
And sticking with Sazerac, this is a bit of a throwback to something I brought up early this last season. Sazerac and RNDC, which is Republic Distributing, the lawsuit came back in the news at the tail end of last year. So what is this lawsuit? Sazerac RNDC lawsuit made headlines in the legal world. It's captivating the attention of industry experts and the consumers, us guys. It's a complex legal battle, and it involves the two probably most prominent entities in the industry. You've got Sazerac, which is a leading American spirits company.
And they're huge on an international scale. Sazerac is a big deal.
And Republic National Distributing Company, who I'm going to refer to as RNDC, it's one of the largest alcohol distributors in the United States. They're distributing in more than 30 states. So what is this lawsuit? The lawsuit centers around a dispute between Sazerac and Republic. This dispute happened at the tail end of 2023. It regards the distribution and sale of Sazerac's products. RNDC was the primary distributor of Sazerac's line of spirits, which Buffalo Trace, Eagle Rare, Colonel Taylor, Fireball.
I just mentioned that one.
They're under Sazerac?
They're under Sazerac.
I just mentioned them. Yeah. All right, well, the more you know.
And, of course, Weller Bourbon. And then Pappy Van Winkle bourbon as well.
Whoa. Amongst others. Yep. Amongst others. There's quite a few.
There's a lot of other products. The lawsuit origins. It's based on contractual disagreements and the alleged distribution agreement violations. RNDC was responsible for distributing Sazerac's products to retailers and establishments across the country. The contention key points are Sazerac has accused RNDC of breaching distribution agreement terms. In other words, they've broken distribution territories, they've set different pricing, and they've affected the promotion of Sazerac products. Product allocation of limited edition sought after products. Now here's a real stickler. We all know Buffalo Trace products are hard to come by. So yeah, what's exactly happened is RNDC was saying, hey, in order for you to get some of this, I need you to buy a whole bunch of this.
And who are they saying that to? Stores or restaurants? Or who?
Stores, restaurants, okay. Liquor, dispensaries, what
so
have you.
So they're holding Buffalo Trace products for a ransom, practically.
Essentially.
Like, buy all of these other things and then you get the goods.
So Sazerac alleges that RNDC has been prioritizing certain retailers. You're a big retailer, you're going to get more. You're a little guy, you're not going to get any.
Yeah.
Leading to unequal distribution. And what they say, a potential revenue loss. RNDC has denied the allegations and has counterclaimed that Sazerac has violated distribution agreement terms. These allegations of trademark infringement is such that Sazerac claims RNDC is using brand names and logos without authorization, and both parties have accused each other of engaging in unfair business practices.
So, RNDC, Sazerac is saying that RNDC is holding their own product, holding Sazerac products for ransom to get a higher revenue. RNDC is saying, well, Sazerac, you're not even giving us the product to begin
right.
with.
Right. And all this happened back at the end of December. They are no longer partners. They've got a different distributor now.
There's bad blood there.
There's
now.
Lots of bad blood.
We're done.
So the alcohol industry implications for you and I, it may affect exactly what we can get, because the outcome is going to be such that this goes to legal ramifications. If this comes down, it could actually affect the three-tiered system. Now, the three-tiered system is not mentioned in this latest article that I saw. Essentially, what it means is distillers cannot sell to the general public. They can only sell to a distributor. Distributors cannot make product, nor can they sell to the end user. They can sell to a bar, a restaurant,
a store,
but they can't sell to you and I. And then the distributor can sell to the bar and what have you. The bar in turn sells it to us, or to a state entity, the state sells it to us. So that's the three-tiered system. The implications here are such that if Sazerac were to win their lawsuit, the three-tiered system, which has been in place since Prohibition, may dissolve.
So this has a lot of implications for everybody, not just you and I, but for the people who are in the liquor stores, in the restaurants, people who are doing the distributing across the board, whether they're doing the hardcore deliveries or whether they're checking product into their warehouses. This has a lot of implications and a lot of, we're changing history here. We've been set in our ways with all of this for over 100 years now, Prohibition 1920. We're 2024 now. So this is something that definitely going to have to keep an eye on.
So this is something that could affect like product availability, like you have a higher demand versus supply, which could essentially be inflation. And
it's a whole lot of things. Yep. It's economics.
Pricing.
101, folks.
Promotions.
Yeah,
and
that's
what have
the basis
you.
Of economics.
Yeah.
Like, supply versus demand. That's really all you need to know. And some other things, but yeah.
So the status is there is no current movement between the two companies. They are busy steamrolling towards some type of legal dispute in some type of court of law. Meaning that it's complex. It's very intricate. This could take months or even years before things are resolved.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that when legal action is even so much as mentioned, the first thing that most businesses want to do is figure out how to end it. They want to either settle or whatever it is. Just make it done. Let's not go to court. Let's not spend that time. Let's not spend that money. There's a lot that has to go down. So for both RNDC and Sazerac to go, no, we want to go full steam ahead and commit to a trial, to commit to a court hold, et cetera, that's a really big thing. They're both really invested in whatever claims they're making. And I'm not going to say who's being truthful or not, I don't know.
I just think there's going to be lots of dirty laundry out there.
This is going to be like a whole soap opera. It just reads like that already.
So we just want to keep our eyes on it. I promise to you, our listeners, I'll keep my eyes on this. I love looking at stuff like this. Whiskey has already set precedent and set, you know, legal ramifications already. I mean, we think of the bottle and bond act. Yeah. We think of so many other things that whiskey has been influential. We got one more coming, and now we're dealing with trademark laws.
There we go.
So the next story I have is distiller MGP sues two Kentucky communities for blocking bourbon warehouses.
Oh, God. Okay.
So I don't want to make
this... Can't catch a break, man.
Yeah. So in early 2023, about a year ago, Nelson County agreed to help bourbon maker MGP.
One of the biggest companies nationally in the whiskey making world. They're huge, okay?
Can you buy shares?
It's MGPI, which is incorporated, so maybe you can. Nelson County agreed to help bourbon maker MGP with financing for construction of five new warehouses. These were to store thousands of barrels just outside of Bardstown. These barrels would be coming from MGP's Lux Row Distillery. Later, MGP secured a similar agreement with the smaller town of Williamston. Williamston is really small. It's about 4,000 people. The community fathers said, okay, yeah, we'll help you. We're going to go ahead and help you with six bourbon warehouses. Now, in both cases, the local governments used zoning and permitting powers to deny MGP permission to move forward. This has happened within the last 3 months, since February.
So how would Williamston and Nelson County, is that what it is?
Yes.
Nelson County?
Yes.
How would they have been able to sign that contract to build these warehouses without having a zoning person come out and give the all clear to do so?
So, you guys probably remember, and I hope our listeners remember, that I had a story 6 months ago, maybe a little longer than that, that the state of Kentucky removed barrel taxes. And when the state of Kentucky removed barrel taxes, that meant that the local municipalities are going to have to scramble to figure out where the money is going to come from to pay for services. Those services could be fire, those services could be hospitals, they could be police departments,
right, okay.
They could be whatever.
Yeah, I remember this story.
So what's happened is, as these guys were being told, you are going to lose this revenue, some of these local communities decided that, you know what, we are going to weaponize our zoning laws. We're going to hold those zoning laws that say if it's going to require more infrastructure, you can't come in. If it's going to require more cost breakdowns of fire departments, you can't come in.
So, but if it's Nelson County who's making the pledge and Williamstown that's making the pledge, then presumably they've already said, we've checked with our zoning ability, or to hell with the zoning ability. So how is it that the zoning can still be a problem now?
They've gone in and denied them. They've actually gone
in and said... So they've retroactively... The people who promised said, actually, haha, pull rug under feet, no mas for you.
Exactly. I wonder if that has happened where I go to school, because where I go to school, yes, the town is quickly growing, but it's more a demand problem for housing. So essentially where I'm going to school, it's a franchise-based liquor store division. I'm not sure. Dad can explain what I mean by franchise, but think of your like standard McDonald's. So essentially, where I'm from would probably be like, absolutely not. Like, you can't have this here simply because we'd have to build more infrastructure when we're focused on housing or something like that.
What would be the point of promising these warehouses this space and then taking it away?
Well, they started looking at costs. And the number one cost that they're dealing with right now is the removal of the black mold, which we've talked about on the show.
I recall that day as well.
Oh, so, yeah, that thingy that we couldn't pronounce.
Yes, the removal of the black fungus that appears everywhere. The maintenance of rural roads. In many cases, you have a town of 4,000 people. Their rural roads are...
Dirt, or
two ditches and a strip of pavement. And you're driving truck after truck after truck of barrels of corn, heavy material. Or whatever. It's maintenance of the rural roads. The fire protection. If you think about it, if you have a warehouse that's five stories high and all that's in it is
wood and highly flammable liquid.
I mean, how many stories have we told alone? I mean, we talked about every expose
I've done, like, has had a little fires segment on fire.
Fire is almost inevitable if you own
a distillery.
It's almost inevitable. Same thing for floods or anything.
So
it's very subjectable to Mother Nature.
Yeah.
What's basically happened is we're sitting at a standstill right now. Nelson County's fiscal court paused applications on all new warehouses in May of 2023. This is after they'd already approved to put it in. Then barrel taxes got removed right about that same time. So now you've got no more revenue coming in to municipalities, but in reality, it's going to be phased out over the next 20 years. But these guys are looking at the long-term ramifications. What is it going to cost our community? They're considering all of this. So a lot more to come on this issue as well.
So this one is a tricky one, because I can understand why the municipalities are going, hey, wait a minute, this is actually going to be a little bit more of a cost than it is a benefit. However, I also think I'm a little bit on MGP's side here, because it's like, hey, if you've already promised this, then what the heck, man? Like, presumably, when you make that promise, you've already done your research on why you're going to do it and why you're not going to do it. So that's just my feeling, but we'll have to see how more of this goes. That's just my preliminary feeling.
I understand that.
And again, I'm going to go ahead and keep... My eyes and ears open on that story. And my last one, this is a little more fun. Got a new scavenger hunt whiskey for you. Rebel 100 debuts a six-year-old bourbon. So in 2023, Rebel's brand manager, Philip Lux, revealed plans to expand the brand. They launched their special finishing series, a wine-finished expression of Rebel 100.
Okay, I'm listening.
Now, Kentucky's Lux Row Distillers has released a new Rebel 100 expression. The whiskey uses the brand's wheated recipe, dated from 1849.
Okay.
They're stating an age of 6 years old.
Okay.
It's bottled at 100 proof, or 50 ABV. And Lux Row's master distiller, John Rempe, notes that Rebel 100 six-year bourbon demonstrates that age is never a bad thing. The combination spotlights our original recipe, and being aged for 6 years results in a rich, full-flavor bourbon.
So,
I don't know.
Has there ever been a person that has been like, age is a bad thing when it comes to alcohol in general?
Me.
Okay, what do you have?
Well, 6 years, I'm not mad at it. For a whiskey, for a bourbon especially, I'm not mad at it. 6 years is fully appropriate. We've talked about higher age products before that sometimes lose their oomph as they age. But 6 years, I'm totally cool with that. Now, I actually really like Rebel products. I think they're a very unique branch within our whiskey wall in our liquor stores. They are more of a wheat forward product as a whole. You get a lot of grassy elements with those guys, and they're always really fresh and kind of have a citrusy element to them. So I'm going to be interested to see how a wine finish impacts these guys.
What do they fall under again? Like, what big kahuna do they...
They're Lux Row.
Lux Row, or MGP.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
They're full circle.
Yep.
So, as always, these links and everything that we mentioned, like with that Buffalo Trace expose and all of those other guys sitting under the Buffalo Trace umbrella, they can be all found on our website, Whiskey for the Ages. If you want to read up a little bit more about these particular stories, you can find those on the podcast archive. They're on our site, and we are looking forward to continuing this season. We've got a lot of fun things planned. We're going to be adding in another review episode this season compared to the last two seasons. So we are very happy to be doing that.
I love doing reviews because then I get to put in a music selection and talk a little bit more about that.
They're always really, really fun. So to kind of go through the episodes here that we have in store for you this season, next time we come around, we're going to be assessing and rating whiskey. We're going to be talking a little bit more about our flavor wheel, which you can also find. We referenced it a couple of times in this episode. Season 3, we're going to be talking about, oh my god, the whiskey value conundrum. If you want to get like a little bit ahead on that, you can find my sip article on our website where I have a whole article titled The Whiskey Value Conundrum. And it's something that I'm particularly passionate about that I talk about all of the time on here. We'll delve into that a little bit more. Episode 4, we like to do our spotlight series. We'll be talking about proof in that first one there with episode 4.
So we've done 90 proof. We've done 100 proof. But there's a whole bunch of whiskeys.
There are so many.
Between 90 and 99.
It's crazy how many sit between there.
So that's kind of like what I like, to be honest. I mean, I like my higher proofs to a degree. So it's kind of like the aging sort of thing. Like, sometimes age works. Sometimes it really doesn't.
So we'll be sitting in Alora's wheelhouse there with that particular episode. Episode 5, like I mentioned, oh my gosh, we're doing a 3 review series this series. Episode 5 is going to be another one of those reviews. We're going to keep it a secret though.
It could be an American. It could be a rye.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Maybe we'll jump the tracks and head to Canada or over to Ireland.
Hell
or,
yeah.
who knows where we'll go?
Who knows? We're going to go crazy, though.
Yep.
So episode 6, we're going to have another guest interview. Very excited about that. Also keeping that one a secret. We do want to add in a little bit that Dad over here is going to be a guest on the Greg Walters Show. Greg Walters has been on our show before. We really love having him on the show. It's always been a really great dialogue. So follow Greg, and Dad will be on there shortly.
Yep. So watch for links. We'll be posting them on our website or our social media platforms and what have you.
Yep. Episode 7, we're going to go back into our distillery expose. Those are ones that are generally held by yours truly, Hannah, over here. I really enjoy those. We get to dig in a lot and have a whole flight of distillery product. I enjoy that.
This next one, this is a new one for us. We're going to do an expose, but we'll be discussing some topics and maybe some challenges we as whiskey aficionados face. Maybe what? About hunting bourbon. Or hunting whiskeys, or maybe about some tips and tricks that we know.
Yeah.
There's going to be some things that we'll just kind of throw that one out. I'm looking forward to it. It should be a fun one.
We'll sit down and really get into some nitty-gritty trade secret type thing.
And then, of course, I got to throw my whiskey history in. I don't know where I'm going to go, but so far we've talked about early American whiskey. 1600s, 1700s, 1800s. We talked about scandal this last time.
It sounds like you're heading towards like prohibition and onward.
We're getting close, but there's some history in there that maybe I've forgotten.
There's a whole bunch.
I mean, you look at the Reconstruction era and you're like, oh, that was a screwed up time.
There's just a lot going on. Yeah. And then, as always, our episode 10, our last episode of the season is going to be a listener's pick review again. So that'll be review number 3 this season.
We love those. So
those are so much fun. Those are arguably the most fun.
Yeah, those are my favorite by far.
Out of the review bunch, we get to hear what you guys are really interested in. So be following us on our social media pages and be subscribed to the podcast, to the blog. That way you can know when we post those options for the listener's pick, you can have your say in which one we review here at the end of the season. So all in all, it's going to be really, really fun. Very excited. Some surprises. Like I said, we're keeping something secret for you guys. And as always, we'd like to say thank you very much to all of you, our loyal listeners. We are doing this here again, this season 3. I really cannot believe we're in season 3. We've already had so much fun, and we're going to continue having even more with you guys. Thank you for being on this journey with us as we explore whiskey responsibly.
So, we look forward to talking to you again soon. And as we finish every episode, we like to ring our Glencairns. So, girls, mine's up here. You can ring with me.
Okay.
All right. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.